that brother Jim is playing with top eight.
Okay, we have been looking at the origin of the Anabaptists, and the conclusion that we have come to with the writer of the book is that Anabaptists, they are the successors of prior people who held the same views that were ostensibly known as the Waldensians, the Paterines, the Calpari, the Novatians, the Donatists. We are talking there about the same people as far as their beliefs are concerned. But as they progressed through the ages and from country to country, as they were driven from one place to another, and many, for instance, the Donatists, they almost were completely annihilated in northern Africa, which then we're talking way back in the 3rd century. So all of these people that we have looked at, they are basically of the same belief. Locally, they're varied in customs and various ways of doing things. That is to be expected just as much as Baptists today. They vary from locality to locality. And that is just a natural thing. And yet, in their basic beliefs, they have a remarkable resemblance. And that, of course, on top of the amazing thing that they did not have many times the complete Bible. Many times get their fragments, and even then they were almost solely dependent upon word of mouth, the type of propagation of the word. So the origin of the Baptists did not, or Anabaptists did not start in the Reformation period, but it predates the Reformation period. And as we brought out, the Reformation period merely made them more visible, at least for a time, since there was a degree of toleration for them.
I often wonder, we have all these different names of missionary Baptists to the centuries. Were they all, in a different period of time, or there were some, there were different parts of the parts of the country that were named like the Donatians and
you brethren did not begin with us, I've got my pointer. Oh, I did my pen. Just like mine. Okay, let's okay, when we're talking about these various names, of course, in the first couple of centuries, all Christians, they were just called Christians. Matter of fact, they were first known by the name Christian in Antioch. The reason why they were known by Christian is because they taught the doctrines of Christ. Okay, this prevails until the beginning of the 2nd century. But in the meantime, various differences arose, and the reason being that a laxness crept in. And one of the first groups to actually make themselves known were the Montanists, and they were basically down here in northern Africa, but they were following a man by the name of Montanus. And of course they held that the highest honor that could befall a Christian is to give his life for the cause of Christ. And for that, they were classified, and many times in history books today, they're still referred to as the fanatics. You know, because they rather die than, matter of fact, many times they seem to actually come. They're persecutors to kill them. Because they held that as the highest honor that could befall them. But then the actual splits within the Christian community did not happen until 250 in Rome. And of course, there the occasion was that the election of a new pastor, and but that's going to laxness versus the faction that said that we ought to retain the fundamental beliefs had become pretty strong. And Cornelius, he headed a faction that said we could not become too strict with our discipline, because during these times of persecution, some had denied the faith, and then as persecution had, these people want to get back in churches, and some of the brethren said, no, you can't come back in unless you be baptized again, because you have denied the faith. So Cornelius said, that is too stringent. And the vote came in the Rome, in the Church of Rome, 251 A.D. Cornelius was elected as the new pastor, and that automatically ousted the opposition that was headed by a man by the name of Novatian. Now, that faction then grew very strong quickly, and many churches followed Novatian by saying, okay, we ought to maintain discipline. So the Novatians then spread throughout what we know today as Italy, and they became very stringent in their disciplines. And of course, the Roman Catholic Party eventually evolved out of the other sect. So the Novatians, we know them from about the 2nd century up until about the 11th century. They were known throughout these regions. Now, in the meantime, down here in northern Africa, following Montanus, another faction arose who followed a man by the name of Donatus. And the question there was, because of the laxness that was practiced, much impurity had crept in the churches. And Donatus said that Christian people ought to be identified by the purity of their lives. And they started to stand against it, and they ran in trouble with the patriarchs who ruled the large city churches. And the Donatists, they became very strong throughout the northern regions of Africa in the 2nd and the 3rd century. And as a matter of fact, Emperor Constantine actually declared them to be the enemies of the state because they opposed his leadership. They said, the emperor can tell us nothing. We have one king, the Lord Jesus Christ. So he declared them enemies of the state, and they became persecuted throughout the northern regions of Africa. Now, those people then were driven northward, and the movement was northward into the barbarian lands, and a people by the name of the Paulicians arose right through these regions, the Balkan states, and what we know today as Turkey. And the Paulicians, of course, they followed very closely the writings of Paul. That's the reason why they're called Paulicians. So we find that all the way the first 5-6 centuries, all the way up into the 8th and 9th century. And the Novatians, as they moved northward, they were known as the Patarenes. The word Patarene means to suffer. And the Cathari, the word Cathari means to be pure. So, and then they spread into southern France. And here they became known around the turn of the millennium as the Albigenses, around the city of Albi. So then after that, they spread into the regions here of the valleys of Piedmont. And there they were known as the Waldensians, the occupants of the valleys. That's literally what that word Waldensians means. And various other groups from these people were known as the Henricians and the Poor of Lyons. These were just the same people who followed these leaders, among them, defenders of the faith. And in the eastern portion, right through here, the Paulicians, as they drifted northward, they were known as the Bohemians throughout what we know today as Poland, Hungary, White Russia. The Bohemians became very strong, and then the Sabians down in these regions. The word Sabian is a Bulgarian term that means Baptist. So the Sabians down in here. Then persecution again drove them back and forth, and they became known as the Anabaptists. And that's what we studied. In the central part of Europe, or Germany as we know it today, and from the Anabaptists, they became known also as the Mennonites. Because from the Menno, when he accepted the Lord, he left the Catholic Church, and became acquainted with the Anabaptists, and he worked among them, and he was a great teacher and defender of the faith, and his followers became known as the Mennonites, who were actually Anabaptists. And it drifted all the way across the northern part of Germany. As a matter of fact, the Mennonites became very strong in these regions up here, and they spread again. Due to persecution, they were driven back in southerly directions. So those are some of the names. Of course, there are several other names that we have come across. Due to the shifting of these people, and as they were called by different names in different localities and different times, we are seeing a progression of these people through the ages, still holding the same doctrines. So that is kind of a bird's-eye view of the progression of Baptist principles. Any other questions?
You said that in some parts that some of the Mennonites still were within the faith and the teachings?
Oh, undoubtedly they are, you know, the same way as Baptist people. Undoubtedly, in these regions, there are still Baptist people, Mennonite people, the Dunkers, as they are known in these regions. That still holds true to the faith. And of course, in Russia, you know, there are large numbers of Baptist people. So, Baptist people are not peculiar to the United States. Baptist people, they're still dispersed throughout the whole world. So, but of course, because the political climate that is existing there, those who hold to the true Baptist principle, they're not allowed to practice that openly. You see, they're still under persecution.
Right.
We should be very thankful to the Lord and singular for the freedom that we have to come to a place like this in the open and to study, you know, the history and the Word of God without being molested by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Because in many parts of the world, brethren, just like you and me, they have to do these things underground, hiding. You know, they're caught, they're imprisoned, and some of them even lose their lives, even today. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
I was going to say, you know, like, what about in Mexico? Is there anything in Mexico?
In Mexico?
Yeah.
Well, there are Baptist people there. As a matter of fact, there's quite a few brethren who are working in Mexico, Mexican men who are being trained in Texas, you know, and you probably heard of that school in Texas down in the southern part of Texas, the Mexican Baptist Institute.
Not too far from Brownsville.
So, I don't know if Ben said the old Brownsville. This particular school is McAllen.
Where's Costa Rica at?
Huh?
Where's Costa Rica
at? Costa Rica is in the, I don't have a map on it. Oh, yeah. Costa Rica is in Central America.
Yeah. I know you have some of the time.
I wanted your brethren who are working in North Mexico right now. And of Puerto Rico is right, Puerto Rico lawyer. You're down in here someplace. You're here someplace, aren't you?
Central America.
That's South America. That's Colombia.
Central America.
El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica. I see my pen was there all the time. I just
wasn't there. Yeah,
so, right in Costa Rica. So, that seminary is there too. Brother Ray, Dean Ray Ward, is leading out in that work. No, he's not. He's even, no, he's not leading out in anything. I know he's working there. Well, he's one of those that's leading out. Okay. Now, of course, we have brethren in Colombia, and I don't think we got any brother in Venezuela or not. I know there's some in Peru. I don't know about the rest of it. I know there's some throughout the region there. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's Optic Bola, yes, in. Libya. Libya. Where are you? Libya?
No, it's in Libya.
Come on.
No,
it's not. No, it's not Libya. What's the other one called? what is that that country that was purchased by the United States and the slaves were shipped over there? No, no. I'm not kidding, though. That is
what are you talking
about
now? After the Revolutionary War, there was a question what to do with men and the slaves. And the government asked many of them what they wanted to do, and some of them wanted to go back over to Africa again. So the United States bought that particular area and sent us free slaves back over there, and that's what we know today as the Civil War. No, I mean the Civil War. What is the name of that land?
That's the first time I heard it.
No,
it's in Africa?
Yes, in Africa.
South Africa.
You Americans all know your history.
I never had even heard it.
You never have.
That's an American history. I didn't know.
I'm going to find that man. Liberia, but not Liberia, Liberia. Liberia, the reason it's called that way, is liberty. Liberia. I think you went to Liberia. Maybe
wherever
he is, there is a school. No, no, they're trying to start school. All right, let's get back here. So, the character of the Anabaptist. Okay, let's just read this first article to a paragraph to get acquainted with the setting. It is amazing how many names were applied in the period of the Reformation to the Baptists. Now, once again, when we're talking about the Reformation period, what are we talking about? Approximate time.
15th
century? Okay, the 16th century. It was in the 1500s, so that would be the 16th century. Okay, the beginning of the 16th century. Specifically, from 1518 to 1548, that is known as the 30-Year War. Okay, of course, the Reformation as such began before the war actually broke out. So, it was in the beginning of the 16th century. Okay, they called each other brethren and sisters, and spoke of each other in the simplest language of affection. The enemies called them Anabaptists because they repeated baptism when converts came from other parties. This name Anabaptist is a caricature. It damned first by faint praise and then by distortion. Now, let me re-emphasize once again that our forefathers never did call themselves Anabaptists. If they ever did put a name to themselves, they call themselves Kada Baptists. The Kada means down. Anna means again. So, you see, we don't re-baptize anyone. If we say you have to come to our church by baptism, we are saying is that as far as we're concerned, you are not baptized. Mm-hmm. You see? So it's not a rebaptism, it is a baptism. So Baptist people have never called themselves Anabaptists, but the enemies called them Anabaptists. And of course, it was a name of derision for the mere fact by doing what they did. They literally and in effect said, you are not the church. Yeah. You see, if you do not recognize someone's baptism, you do not recognize someone's authority. Mm-hmm. So if you do not recognize that authority, then you in effect, even though you may not say it, but in effect you say, you are not the church. So that is what is implied by not accepting baptism, okay? So, that's pretty strong language. That, the appropriate term Anabaptist was and is a vile slander. It was invented to conceal fault. It shrouded in the fog the grand ideals of a people loving peace and truth. The term is even yet a pellet of wax in the optic glass of a telescope. The tendency of history is to change front, but the most historiographers still look at the whole question through corrugated glasses. Of course, what they mean by corrugated glasses, you know, in other words, they have tunnel vision. And of course that is true. When you read a history book, you are reading through that particular individual's preconceived notions concerning his beliefs and his background concerning the Word of God. So to really understand history, do not just rely upon one book. You see, you should read various authors, and for that matter, from various backgrounds. This way you get a composite picture of the same period, and this will give you all the sides, and you can then make your own judgment as to which road you want to believe, and probably as it happens. Because if you would read it from, say, the writers of Catholicism, you're going to get it from the Catholic standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
If you read men, Lutherans, or any other persuasion, you're going to get it from their standpoint. And for that matter, if you read a Baptist history, you'll get it from the Baptist standpoint, you see. So just because something may have been written by a Baptist does not make it absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
So get a variance of opinions concerning a particular time. So they were called Kata Baptists. Kata, as I said, means down, because they denied infant baptism and practiced immersion. Now really, immersion was not an issue for many centuries, because even up until fairly modern times, even the Catholics baptized by immersion. It wasn't until modern times that, because of passion, immersion was set aside in favor of first effusion. But that was found to be too messy too. Effusion means to take a container of water and pour it over the person. So they didn't like that either, because especially the ladies of the court, it messed up their hairdos and all that. So they set effusion aside, and they started to practice sprinkling. In other words, it is much more dignified by a priest, not just kind of sticking his little fingers into water and just go like this. It's all you have to do, kind of blink a little bit, and it doesn't do much harm. So that is literally how sprinkling became an accepted practice. It was because people just did not want to get wet all over. All right?
Oh,
yeah. But various denominations, Protestants, they still dip their finger at it. So they do have their vessels now in Catholicism. But as of late, the Catholics now, they give their converts the choice whether they want to be sprinkled or immersed. So even Catholics now go back to immersion, because they realize that immersion is the Bible practice. There's no question that all denominations pre-admit that correct baptism is by immersion. I have never yet come across anyone who would defend sprinkling as a biblical mode of baptism. Of course, just because they know it's wrong doesn't mean they're going to quit practicing it. So when I went to seminary, a Presbyterian, when he was in St. Pat, I was in, and me one day talked about baptism, and he freely admitted, yes, baptism is by immersion. But it doesn't make any difference whether you are sprinkled or immersed, because all you're looking at is the symbol, you see. Well, of course, even the symbol has to picture the reality.
Mm-hmm.
You see, baptism is to picture what?
Your
burial. And there's no way in the world you can picture a burial by sprinkling. See, when you take a body to the cemetery, you do not sprinkle a little dirt on it. You cover it. That is what a burial is. So there's no denomination who will defend sprinkling from a biblical standpoint.
I got baptized in the 21, 22 years old, and Catholic Church and they just hold your head over his bow and you get a pitcher of water.
They poured it on you?
Yeah, poured it on you.
Okay, that was.
Like your face and your forehead on you.
That was by effusion then?
Yeah.
I see, in certain areas they practice all three. They practice sprinkling, effusion, or immersion. Mm-hmm. Now, many of the new, of course, Catholic churches, they don't have the baptismal fonts. But in the old country, where those old churches are, there is not a single Catholic church that doesn't have a baptismal font in it. You see, where they used to baptize people. But now they also have their, their bowl of holy water. But they also have, as a matter of fact, some of the large cathedrals. And you see, many times you can identify them by their structure. Many times, a Catholic church is, there's only a few variations. That is usually the basic structure of a Catholic church, especially in the old country. And many times you will see a little round addition in the back there. You see? Wherever you see that, that's the baptismal font. You see? So you can identify these cathedrals as to which ones have the baptismal font and which do not. Most of them have it. Okay. It's either round or at times it is kind of squared off like this. But it's just kind of an area that sticks out. Okay. So the extent of the Baptist movement in the 16th century can scarcely be exaggerated. This malady of Anabaptism and fanaticism, says Dorner. You see, they put Anabaptists and fanatics into one category because no man ought to be that fanatic that he should die for the mere mode of baptism or just because of the Lord's Supper, because he doesn't believe in transubstantiation or consubstantiation, as Luther taught. Of course, the Catholics do that transubstantiation. Now, the Anabaptists, of course, they oppose both of those theories as being unscriptural. So, and for this, they died. They were persecuted. They were killed, not only singly, but many times by whole congregations. So they were called fanatics, for standing for these principles. So, they had in the third and fourth decades, that is between 1520 and 1540, spread like a hot fever through all Germany, from Swabia and Switzerland along the Rhine to Holland and Friesland, from Bavaria, Middle Germany, Westphalia, and Saxony as far as Holstein. And by this description, you pretty well can draw some boundaries, and you will find that this includes both Western and Eastern Germany. So throughout the center portion of Europe, these Anabaptists spread during the hottest part of the Reformation period. Remember that the actual war years were from 1518 to 1548. So during that time, from 1520 to 1540, he says, they spread like a hot fever. So, of course, times were rough back in those days. Not only were the wars raging, not only the large war, but also the small skirmishes from one little land to the other, but that was also the time when the Great Plague ran through the continent. And during those times, the central part of Europe was depopulated. They estimate that two-thirds of the people died during those years. So it was a rough time and of course. You know, whenever people are in such bad straits, you know, just mere religion just will not satisfy them, because they know that they need something besides just an outward form of religion. And many of them turn to the Baptist people. And they accept the Lord, and that caused the Baptist movement to become very strong during those years. Anabaptism represented in the 6th century the stream of popular thought, feeling, and aspiration, which has not ceased to flow through the centuries, has not been for fierce persecutions, which from the beginning fell upon the Baptists. In all human probability, the Reformation would have been distinctly a Baptist movement. In that event, the character of the Reformation would have been far more thorough and spiritual, and the battle for human liberty would not have been delayed for ages. But the reason for that is that even though, say, for instance, Luther and his followers objected to being persecuted by the Roman party, yet they felt no qualms at all to persecute the Baptists. They said that those are just heretics. You're doing God a favor by wiping them from the face of the earth. And of course, as I discussed last week, in Switzerland, Calvin did a good job in trying to get rid of the Baptists. In Italy and France, the Pope did a mighty good job in organizing whole armies against the Baptists to annihilate them. And of course, the Baptist people, during this time, they found very few places of refuge, and many of them died during this time. Not only by the sword, but many of them actually died of starvation. And many of them were driven up into the high country, and they literally died of the elements, because they had to leave their homes without provisions, and they just starved and froze. So many of them just fell to the persecuting fervor of that day. So the leaders of the Reformation feared for their prerogatives, and the rulers for their thrones. And these two forces combined to defeat any show of human freedom. The masses of the people, however, were with the Baptists. The Baptist sentiments, because they believed that every man could have the right to his own conscience and to practice his religion as he saw fit. The common people subscribed to that. And Luther, he was petitioned by the common people to speak before their side. But Luther knew who was backing his play for power. And he spoke against the people. And he wrote in a declaration that the nobility ruled by divine authority. That is literally what set the common people against Luther. Up to that point, he was the champion of the people, but then they turned against him. And of course, that's easy enough to understand, because they thought, right is a man who stands for the principles of the common man, but he did not. He sold out to the nobility. And Reformation took a turn to those in power. Now, the novelty and boldness of the doctrines of the Baptists literally filled with terror the rulers of the world. Now, why would that be? Because Baptists said that a man does not have the right to prescribe someone else's religion, whether he be king or common man. And of course, remember that during those times, religious toleration was only for the nobility. In other words, many times people think that the Reformation brought automatic religious freedom to all people. But nothing could be farther from the truth. Religious freedom was granted only to those in power.
Mm-hmm.
And when those in power chose to be Catholics, their servants, in other words, their serfs and the common citizenry, were automatically Catholic, whether they wanted to be or not. And if he chose to be Lutheran, then the common citizenry became Lutheran. And that's how it worked. You see, and of course, the common folk, they thought, we jump from the frying pan into the fire. And of course, as a result of that, a couple of centuries later, this erupted in what we know then as the Peasant Wars, which actually toppled the ruling houses throughout Europe and put an end to the monarchies, as they were known at this particular time. So they were just tired of having people who tell them what they should believe or what they cannot believe. So, but the sentiments of the Baptists were always very popular with the people. Many of the leaders were scholarly men, well-versed in Greek and Hebrew. The wholesale slaughter of the peasants in 1525 caused the spread of Anabaptism in the next 25 years all over Europe. Cities and districts which had been friendly to Luther went over to the Anabaptists, and thousands of tradesmen were to be counted as adherents. The Archbishop of Lund, Imperial Ambassador with the King of Rome, wrote July 9, 1535, that while thousands of them had been killed, there is a great quantity of this sect in several parts of Germany. Albertus Hortensius, writing in 1548, affirms, the Anabaptists have increased with marvelous rapidity in all places. So, as has been shown before, hard times have always been good for God's people. You know, it's those easy times that place havoc among God's people. But hard times have always been good for God's people. They've been strong, and they really spread the word of the Lord. So maybe what we need is a little bit of harder times.
So I'm going to say, you got a kind of a deal of estimating how many churches have they had at what certain period of time and how many they have now, and they've lost thousands of people in these days that we live in today. And when you read here, you're talking about these people are spreading.
Yeah. Thousands were baptized by Hittmeyer and other Baptist preachers in Switzerland, Moravia, Germany, the Netherlands, and other countries. Frank says, the course of the Baptists was so strict that the doctrine soon spread over the whole country, and they quickly obtained a great body of adherents, baptized many thousands, and all the truth to their side many well-meaning souls. They were thrown into prison, tortured with branding sword, fire, water, and divers imprisonments, so that in a few years, some 2,000 or more are estimated to have been put to death. So, persecution, of course, thinned their ranks. So much has been said about the Baptists being turbulent and fanatical that it's really a surprise to many when it is found that they were the most peaceful of men. That they were many persons called Anabaptists who were fanatics, there is no doubt. When it is remembered, however, that the worst of outrages were committed against them, that they were hunted like wild beasts, that their women were outraged, that they were drowned in rivers and burned at the stake, that every means of exasperation was used against them, we are only surprised that they were as moderate as they were. At the cause of these revolutionists succeeded, they would have been regarded as the most brilliant champions of liberty, and they would have been classed among the world patriots. Since they failed, they have been that the contention in which they were engaged was far more political than religious. That, of course, is true many of those revolts that actually were ascribed to Anabaptists were really political in nature rather than religious. Okay. Those are pretty prophetic.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so
you
still got some time.
Now, is this talking about what was blamed to the Anabaptists, the revolts that you're talking about?
Those were turbulent times. And really to understand this here, you almost have to know a little bit of European history. Because during these times, when we're talking about the wars of the Reformation period, we're not just talking about two large armies confronting one another. But these wars were fought from county to county, from one small town to the other. And many times, even local lords, many of them, they were actually thieves and robbers. They organized small bands, and in the name of religion, they massacred and stole and robbed to enrich themselves. And many times, they blamed to the Baptists. The Anabaptists did it. And that's how the Anabaptists regained such a bad reputation. And that was particularly true. There's one incident in European history, which is the uprising of they were then persecuted as murderers. You see, when in reality, they had no pardon. So many times, like for instance in Roman times, the Christians were blamed for everything that was adverse. When a natural disaster happened, the Christians were blamed for storms, for floods, for droughts. It's the fault of the Christians. Well, in later centuries, the table returned, they said it's the fault of the Anabaptists. You see, and of course, this caused the sentiment to arise against them that persecution was the order of the day.
Is that why they said there were witches and stuff like that?
You see, that arose during those times. Well, actually, even earlier than that. Now, this was a tool of Catholicism to begin with, where they declared those who were opposed to Catholicism many times as witches and warlocks. And after the Reformation period, this was picked up by the Reformers, and they persecuted the those who opposed their particular religious views in the same way as the Catholics did before them. And after the Reformation, of course, the witch burnings and both in Europe and in England, which was brought all the way into this country. And the interesting thing was that many of those who practiced that, they just had escaped persecution themselves. And the worst offenders were the Puritans. The Puritans of England. You know, the reason why they call Puritans, because they objected to the gross immoralities that had erupted in the Church of England. And they said, we ought to clean up the Church of England. And because of their stand for purity within the Church of England, they were called the Puritans. Now, they're not the same ones as the Puritans of earlier days, back in the 3rd and 4th century. In northern Italy, there's a group that was known as Puritans or Cathari. Same word. But the Puritans of later years, they were Protestants. Now, when they came, and they left England because of persecution. Mm-hmm. And when they came to the States, to the colonies at that time, they passed laws in their communities in which they settled that no other but their own brand of religion could be practiced. And it's a well-documented fact that they persecuted Baptist people. They burned witches and hunted witches. Of course, Salem is notorious for that. And the Puritans are behind that. And those were Protestants. They were not Catholics. They were Protestants. Okay. So, you know, as I've said many times, we as Baptist people, we can be proud of our heritage. That Baptist people have never persecuted anyone for their faith. Mm-hmm. So only Baptists and only Quakers can say that too, because they never have either. But every other group, as they have a history of persecution, mm-hmm. where they persecuted those who would not believe as they believe. So our Baptist people have never done that, because we have always believed that every man has the right to practice his religion according to his own conscience. And the only thing we're saying is, now if that does not agree with the Word of God, then please go someplace where he does not interfere with us. Mm-hmm. You see, so we will not permit this in our churches, but you have the right to do whatever you want to. So that's what Baptist people have ever held. Okay? Any other questions? Okay, we'll start here next week. On page 99, the second paragraph. We left off with faith